It's really nice to be here, very honored to receive this award. I know a lot of really good preachers I go to class with. I don't know how I got this, but I am very appreciative and humbled, very glad to have met Dr. Robinson, especially having listened to the accomplishments. Professor Emeritus, All-American, awards named after you, Olympic gold medalist. I can't help but feel like if you had set your mind to it, you really could have done something with your life. But I'm glad you're here. Especially appreciative also to Drs. Glower and Gregory. I know I probably speak for many when I say that they have helped me see that this peculiar task of preaching is survivable, meaningful, and sometimes enjoyable. And so thank y'all. Thank you, some of my friends from Harris Creek are here. Good to see you. Around a year ago, I found myself sitting at a table. And at this table, I'm surrounded by family and friends, surrounded by people I love, surrounded by my people. Right, I'm back home for Christmas break, sitting in this big, comfy booth at my favorite restaurant back home. You know the one I'm talking about. Right, I've got my little brother to my left. I've got my girlfriend to my right. I've got my mother sitting across from me. I've got my grandparents to the right of my mother, and I've got my best friend to the left of my mother, and I've got this big, steaming bowl of fettuccine Alfredo just looking up at me, begging me to devour it. So we quickly say the blessing. Everybody starts to dig in. You know, there's rolls being thrown on plates. There are forks and knives flying out of napkins. There are salt and pepper shakers zipping across the table. Everyone is famished. Everyone's just stuffing food in their mouth. But I just sit there. Just sit there. Fork and knife not brandished. Alfredo untouched. No appetite to speak of. And it was all because I knew somebody else should be at that table. I knew somebody else should be at that table. I knew somebody was missing. Right, nobody else noticed, and that's because it was my fault he wasn't there. He was missing, and it was all my fault. He was missing, and it was all my fault. Right? In Luke 14, we find Jesus sitting at a table surrounded by people who, in what we can only call predictable gospel fashion, are not very happy with him. Now, as a general rule of thumb, I think this is maybe taught in Intro to Scriptures, it's not a good thing to criticize Jesus. But if I can be honest, Jesus kind of has this one coming. He really does. He's on this long journey to Jerusalem. He's nasty. He probably hasn't had a good meal in months, perhaps. And he gets invited to come eat dinner in the house of a leading Pharisee, which in the Greek, Dr. Steele, you can check me on this, means that he was kind of a big deal. Is that right? It's Greek nuance there. He's kind of a big deal. Now, everybody knows when you're the dinner guest of someone who's kind of a big deal, really when you're the dinner guest of anyone, but especially someone who's kind of a big deal, there are certain things you do and there are certain things you don't do. Right? Now, somewhere near the top of the don't do list, we probably have the general prohibition rule: don't insult the other guests or the host. Don't do that. This is kind of table manners 101. Right up there with don't eat soup with a fork and don't show up without pants on. Right? If you cannot abide by these general rules, then people there will think you were raised in a barn, which incidentally might explain how Jesus, get it? Which incidentally might explain how Jesus has managed to break both of these rules within moments of one another at this dinner he's eating, and now he has everyone at the table staring daggers at him, just staring daggers at him. Right? He walks into this dinner and he immediately notices this man suffering from dropsy. Which just means he has these big puffy spots on his body where fluid is accumulated under the skin. And as Jesus notices this man, some Pharisees notice Jesus. And you can just see what they're thinking. It is the Sabbath. And Jesus better not try to heal this dude. I know Jesus knows. I know Jesus would never in a million years try to heal this dude in front of us. Oh my Yahweh, he just healed that guy. Now, to put this mildly, healing someone on the Sabbath in front of a group of Pharisees in the house of a leading Pharisee who just invited you to dinner is not considered good form. This is not good form. This does not start dinner out on a good note, but the show must go on. Jesus' rudeness is tolerated, and far as we can tell, we get through the rest of the dinner unscathed. And then we come to this after-dinner kind of drink and entertainment time the Greeks called the symposium, right? And as an honored guest, Jesus would be expected to say a few words, right? So he raises his glass, filled no doubt with the grape juice they kept on tap for good Baptists like Jesus, and gives it a little tap, you know, anticipation fills the air. What's Jesus going to say? What's Jesus going to say? Something profound, no doubt. Can God make a rock so big it can't be moved? Rather, no, Jesus says this. Yeah, I was noticing when I came in and sat down, I noticed how you were all like fighting for the best seats. I mean, you were trying to be sly and stealthy about it, but you were all manipulating and maneuvering your way towards the best seats. You know, you really shouldn't do that. You really shouldn't do that. Because, I mean, think about it. If somebody more important than you shows up, and I hear there's a couple, then you're going to look like a big idiot when you get sent to the kids' table in front of everybody. Right? This is petty. It's petulant. If I were to tell you how I really felt about it, I would say you look like a bunch of middle schoolers playing a stupid game. Don't do that. Again, this is not good form. This is not good form at all. Right? Jesus insults the guests for picking the best seats, and at this point, a complete hush has fallen over the table. Only sound being that of the grinding teeth of those around Jesus as they think about the very not nice things they want to do to him. And so, at this point, who do you really start to feel bad for? You feel so bad for the host. I mean, he thought he was doing a little homeless Jesus a favor, inviting him here for dinner, and I mean, no one's ever going to come back to a dinner at this guy's house again. How's he going to save this? You know? No more grape juice for Jesus. He has had enough. Let's cut it off right there. But perhaps before he can get that out, Jesus turns to him. Jesus turns to the host and he says this, our scripture reading, Luke 14, let's read it one more time, 12 through 14. And he also went on to say to the one who had invited him, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or your rich neighbors. Otherwise, they may also invite you in return and that will be your repayment. But when you give a reception, a dinner, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, since they do not have the means to repay you. Since they do not have the means to repay you. Right? He criticizes this guy's guest list. And the first thing that jumps out is Jesus tells him not to invite those people whom you would most naturally invite. Don't invite your friends. Right? Don't invite your friends to eat dinner with you. Now, in Jesus' day, to eat dinner with someone was to be their friend. Put that another way, you didn't eat with just anybody. You ate with your friends. That might be important. And the other thing that jumps out is the reason Jesus gives for not inviting your friends. Don't invite them because they might invite you back. All right, so just make sure we're clear here. Don't invite them to dinner because, drum roll, they might invite you back to dinner. Heaven forbid. Right, now, Jesus here criticizes something we might call the reciprocity principle. Right, in Jesus' day, the primary factor in determining friendship was reciprocity. You were friends with people of a similar social status, people who could do for you what you could do for them. And so when looking for friends, you always looked where? On your level, or where else could you look? Of course, you could look up, right? People who could do things for you, help you get somewhere, make your life better. And so the way you chose who got to sit at your table mirrored how you chose your friends. And who was sitting at your table was a statement. A statement that some people belong at your table, and a statement that certain people, they don't belong at your table. A statement about how you identify with others on the most fundamental level. A statement about how you structure the world and reality and, well, everything. All right, let's have a nostalgia. How many of you remember your high school cafeteria? I'm going to need you to go back and think. It may give you a stomachache, but remember your high school cafeteria. Now, if your high school cafeteria was anything like mine, then you had certain tables reserved for certain groups of people. Right? And there were no signs on these tables. There was something far more powerful than signs, the unspoken social pecking order, right? And so you had the first class tables filled with it was reserved for the elites. You know, athletes, class favorites, those with pretty faces and good last names, those who had a lot going for them, those who could get what they wanted. Right? And then you had the second class tables reserved primarily for the average people. They were average in the things that counted. Looks, money, clothes, status, so on and so forth. They're about par for the course. And then you had the coach tables, or maybe caboose, partial train metaphors tables, and it was reserved for, whatever was left over. Their appearance was rather unimpressive. They couldn't really do anything any of us considered valuable. They were frequently in the way with their problems and with their issues. And for the life of you, you could never remember their names. You could just never remember their names. Right? And those were the tables, and there were no mixing of the tables. You'd be more likely to see Dr. Olson standing in line to get John Piper sign his Bible than you would see a mixing of the tables. It just did not happen. No mixing of the tables, right? Now, if you're like me, I am deeply ashamed by that. That gives me a stomach ache. And I'd like to think I have matured since then. I certainly have more gray hairs. I'd like to think I'm better than that. That I'm better than that. But I can't help but notice that most of my meals are still with people who look a lot like me. Most of the time I sit down at the table, I'm sitting across from people who I am very comfortable with, people who can do things for me, people who can make my life better, people who can get me somewhere, people who would have been sitting at my table in high school. People who would have been sitting at my table in high school. And I'd like to think that the church is better than that, but when I look out on Sunday mornings, and when I look at our services and our small groups and our events, I see a striking resemblance to my high school cafeteria. I look around right now and I see a lot of people who could return our invitation to dinner. I see a lot of people who could return our invitation to dinner. And after these just painful words of deconstruction, this punch in the gut, don't invite your friends, those you always surround yourself with, don't you invite them to dinner. Jesus finally offers some words of construction. Praise the Lord. He says, invite these people. Invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. Oh, yeah. We know these people. Those people who are always in the way. Those people who inconvenience our lives with their problems and their issues. Those people who have nothing to offer us. Those people who could never, never, ever in a million years ever do for us what we could do for them. They could never do for us what we could do for them. Jesus says, invite them to dinner. Now, at this point, it is so tempting to, label this a social justice story and blow the social justice trumpet and say, if the church would just stop spending money on projectors and cool PowerPoints, and if they would just help out the poor, we'd get it all sorted out. And while that is tempting, I think it is a huge mistake. And it's a huge mistake because that is not nearly as radical as what Jesus is actually saying here. Not near as radical as what Jesus is actually saying here. Jesus is not asking us to help out the poor here. Jesus is not asking us to practice charity to the lowly. Not asking us to feel sorry for them, to meet their needs. What Jesus is asking is this. Invite them to dinner with you. Invite them to dinner with you. Right? Do not send them food. Do not give them money for groceries. Do not have a canned food drive. Do not go work at a soup kitchen. Invite them to come eat dinner at the table with you. Which, of course, in Jesus' context is to say, make them your friends. Make them your friends. Embrace them as equals, not your projects and not your charity cases, but friends. Friends. Now, around a year ago, I was back home for Christmas break and had the opportunity to speak at this church plant that my grandparents were a part of, which is funny in and of itself. But I go there and I talk, and after the service, there's this long line of people coming up to me, you know, telling me how great I am, stroking the old ego, which is both good and very bad for the ego. And if people at your grandparents' church don't think you're good, then, yeah, you're in trouble. About halfway through this line of people, I get this tap on the shoulder. Why not? Turn around, and I see this man there who has clearly come in off the streets. I actually saw him come in while I was talking. And he tells me he wants to talk to me. All right, so I look at him. I look back at this line of people waiting to tell me how great I am, and I know what I should do. So I tell him I'll catch him later. No. I go over with him, and we talk, and truth be told, it takes him a while to really talk. He just kind of stands there. And after a while, he slowly starts to open up, tells me he just got out of prison 3 days ago. Really, what for? Physical assault. Awesome. It wasn't the last preacher you talked with, was it? Okay, good. And he starts talking about Daniel in the lion's den. I'm feeling like that's where he's been, and that he really wants to turn things around, that God led him in off the street, never heard of this church before, to come in there and, you know, and hear some things and come talk to me. And I just listen, and you know, after he gets finished, I ask him if I can pray for him. I get finished praying, and I look up, and he's just got these big, big tears in his eyes. Right? And this is one of those guys who you don't think he has tear ducts. You know what I mean? This is not a person who cries. And so, of course, what happens to me, I tear up. Horrible. But, you know, I fight it off. It happens. We have, like, a little moment there, and he asked me if I can give him a ride somewhere. And I'm like, yeah, of course I can give you a ride. So I tell my family to go on, that I'll meet him at the restaurant. I think they were hanging around because they thought he might beat me up. And they go on to the restaurant, and so we jump in the car, and I take him to where we're going, and as he's getting out, I just feel compelled to give him some money. He hadn't asked for any, and so I give him all the money that's in my wallet. My grandpa gave me a $50 bill, which was and is still a lot to me, and so I give him that, and he takes this $50 bill, and he just crumbles on the curb there, just crumbles on the curb. And when he looks up at me, he again has these big tears in his eyes, and I again get these big tears in my eyes. He tells me he loves me, and we just hug it out, and he goes, and as I put the car in drive, and I'm driving to the restaurant. Needless to say, I'm on cloud nine. I'm like, Jesus, your boy's getting pretty good at this discipleship thing. You might want to just take me now. That was pretty good. I just gave up all these compliments and this money and this time to help this poor guy out. You know, and so we get there to the restaurant, and I sit down in this big, comfy booth, man, and I am surrounded by family and friends. I'm surrounded by people I love. I am surrounded by my people. I've got my little brother on my left. I've got my girlfriend on my right. I've got my mother sitting across from me. I've got my grandparents sitting to the right of my mother, and I've got my best friend sitting to the left of my mother, and I've got this big bowl of fettuccine Alfredo looking up at me, just begging me to devour it. And as I'm about to dig in, these just haunting words come creeping in the back of my. When you have a dinner, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. That man did not need your charity. He needed your friendship. He needed your friendship. Maybe next time we find ourselves sitting at a table, surrounded by family and friends, surrounded by people we love, surrounded by our people, perhaps we should consider what Jesus would say if he were to pull up a chair at our table. Perhaps we should look around, look past our own noses, and ask ourselves, who's missing? Who's missing? Amen.